Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, broadcasting to you from Jacksonville, Florida. We're here in the studios of 88.1 The Promise. It is a fantastically beautiful day in Jacksonville. I'm looking out at a lake and at a beautiful sunlit afternoon, and I left Louisville, as a matter of fact, coming a little bit out of a thaw as it was warming there. So maybe where you are, it's turning into a pretty day as well. I hope so. You know, we're going to be talking today about, I think, one of the most frontline issues in terms of the collision of the Christian and biblical worldview with the worldview of a secular world. And it comes down to the issue of this: where do we find moral authority and moral principle, and how far can we go with choice as the great moral principle? Now, the reason we're going to be talking about this is because today there are two news stories that collide. And these news stories are not brand new today. They have been really developing over the last several days. But we have arrived at a point where we've got to talk about these things, and they really belong together. First of all, we have a young woman selling her virginity online. And actually, she's doing it now through a house of prostitution in Nevada. Her name is Natalie Dillon. And what she is trying to do is to auction her virginity. And that sounds rather salacious, and it is. But the most important aspect of our discussion here is that she says she's doing so because she's been freed from old-fashioned ideas of right and wrong. She says she doesn't value virginity as a moral issue, only as a financial issue. And she says, as a matter of her choice, she is choosing to exploit her virginity in order to earn cash. Okay, choice. There are no limitations upon choice, if indeed choice is your only principle. And the reality is that feminists aren't alone in this, but feminists have been front and center for the last several decades in arguing that a woman's right to choose whatever she wants to choose is the only valid moral principle, and no one has the right to interrogate her choice or to question her choice or to bring her choice under other moral scrutiny. That's one issue. The second issue has to do, of course, with the Suleiman babies. In this case, it's really, really bizarre. We're talking about Nadia Suleiman. She already had six kids by in vitro fertilization. Now she has given birth to octuplets. And so she now has 14 children. There is no father. The father, of course, is a sperm bank. And she is doing so because she says she has the choice to do so. And, you know, Ellen Goodman, writing in several newspapers in her syndicated column published today, says fertility doctors don't say no, nor should they, to single or gay patients or those who already have children. In other words, it's really a matter of choice. She says that what this woman has done is nuts, but no one can really interrogate her choice. That's the argument that so many are making here. Now, Ellen Goodman goes on to try to say that you should use biomedical ethics to argue that it just isn't right to implant this many embryos into her womb. But in terms of an unmarried woman just having access to in vitro fertilization, someone who already had six children seeking fertility treatments, she says it's a matter of choice. This is where feminism has run into a boxed canyon. Let me give you another example. Right now, all across the world, there are sex selection abortions being done. Now, in many nations of the world, it's a matter of very public concern. In India, in China, China has this draconian, anti-humanist and anti-moral one-child-only policy. And there's so many parents, if they're going to have one child, they want the child to be a boy. And so you have this horrible imbalance right now. Because the policy's been on the books for a long time, you've got a lot of young men right now. They vastly outnumber young women. There is no prospect for a bride. What you have are female babies, girl babies, being aborted. Now, feminism says they support a woman's right to choose, a woman's right to choose an abortion for any reason or for no reason. Well, what if the abortion is in order to eliminate a girl baby? Feminism obviously has an investment in speaking up for women, but they're not ready to speak up for unborn women, because to do so would be to violate choice. You know, what we're looking at here is what really happens when you take a moral principle that can't bear weight, and you try to put huge issues of moral consequence on it. The reality is that this issue, the principle of choice, can't carry moral weight. It cannot be a sufficient principle to answer the great moral issues of our time, including matters of life and death, including abortion, including in vitro fertilization and access to fertility treatments, including same-sex marriage and all the rest. We are worshiping at the idolatrous altar of choice. And perhaps the intersection of these two news stories today is a reminder to us that choice has its limits, and I think that's a good thing for us to discuss on the program today. I'd like for you to join me by calling 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. What do you do in a world where the only moral principle recognized is choice? You see, no one wants to say that there are good choices and bad choices because, well, that just throws you back into what they see as an old-fashioned, outmoded, patriarchal, totalitarian, authoritarian ethic. But we all know there are good choices and bad choices. It's not enough to say this is my choice, that's your choice. There have to be some principles that go far beyond choice, transcend choice. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. What do you say to your neighbor? What do you say to your daughter? What do you say to someone who asks you in terms of the workplace or your local church? Don't you think it's her right to choose? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We are broadcasting live from the studio of 88.1 FM, The Promise, here in Jacksonville, Florida. We are, of course, up at Twitter. You can sign up to follow and read the discussion thread there by going to MuellerRadio@twitter.com. Sign up, and you'll find the discussion thread there. And I'm really glad to welcome so many who are joining us there. It's a great way to have the conversation, and we're going to get as much on the air as possible. You can always go to the website at albertmuller.com. You can send us mail there, and we'll be following all of that, trying to get as much of your response on the program today. The phone number again is 877-893-8255. Interesting news today. I was flying, and I had to spend some time in a couple of airports, and that gives you an opportunity to look at newspapers from across the country, not just in the internet. There's just something about holding the newsprint of various newspapers from across the country, and you see not only the kind of digital display, and I'm thankful we have that in terms of internet access. It's unprecedented. But there's just something about holding the newspaper in your hand. The New York Times I have right here in my hand. The left column above the fold, front page, U.S. women set to surpass men in labor force. One of the subtitles in this particular news story in the headline says, a prolonged recession may bring a lasting change in roles. Now, here's something that I had not thought about until I saw this story. When you're looking at the layoffs that are the matter of consequence of this particular economic downturn, listen to this. A full 82% of the job losses have befallen men. That's the report from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. It's reported in today's New York Times. 82% of the jobs lost since the beginning of this economic downturn have been lost to men. And it might be that even right now, women outnumber men in the United States workforce. Now, here again, what do you do with that? What do you do with the fact that for the very first time in our nation's history, it could be that there are more women employed than men? Now, the New York Times, of course, is looking at this with an interesting angle, saying they wonder if this will change the roles of men and women in the home. It provides in the article some statistics from the American Time Youth Survey, analysis by economists saying that it turns out that when men are unemployed and their wives are employed, that still doesn't change a whole lot of what's going on in terms of the coverage of domestic responsibilities. When you start looking at this, you realize that there are some who see this as good news. There are some, and they're reflected in this news story. There are some who say it's good news that women will outnumber men because now it says maybe at least now women can have the advances they've been looking for in the workforce. Okay, from a Christian worldview perspective, let me just suggest to you that this is devastating if men are losing their jobs and men cannot provide as God made them to provide for their families. I feel for these men. I look at this and I can only think that there are many men right now who are desperately frustrated because, given the economic situation that has befallen the nation, they are unable to provide for their families as they are committed to do and want to do with every fiber of their being. So I have to tell you, when I look at this, I'm thinking with sympathy to an awful lot of men out there, a lot of fathers and husbands who want to be the providers for their family and are determined to be, but they're going to have to do so in a different way than they have until they lost their job. And they're going to have to do so over against the fact that there are just a lot of people ready to jump on this story and say it's a good thing that women now outnumber men in the labor force. Interesting to think about. We'll be right back to talk about choice as a moral principle. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. These two stories are both, slightly salacious and almost sensationalistic, except for the fact they're both true, and they're both getting a lot of attention. And they're both prompting conversation because they're the kinds of stories that you end up having to talk about. Because when someone presents them to you, the obvious question is, okay, what do you say to this? Case number one, a young woman by the name of Natalie Dillon, 22 years old. She is auctioning her virginity through the Moonlight Bunny Ranch in Nevada, where prostitution is legal. She's a women's studies major, notice that, feminist major, at Sacramento State University. She's writing her thesis on, quote, the value of virginity. By the way, she says that's not her real name. She says she's going to use the money to pay for her graduate degree in marriage and family planning. Go figure that. So far, according to the Wall Street Journal, the highest bid is $3.8 million. Now, in her own presentation of this, she said, she wrote this herself, she said, for me, valuing virginity as sacred is simply not a concept I could embrace, but valuing virginity monetarily, now that's a concept I could definitely get behind. Now, writing in the Wall Street Journal, Barry Weiss is right to suggest that she's presenting herself as the model of a woman who is freed from the morality of the past. And she is now the perfect symbol in her own mind of feminist empowerment. But, see, here's the thing. She's turning herself into a prostitute. I mean, you can name it any way you want to name it, but this is just a form of very sensationalistic prostitution. But she's going to argue that this is her choice. And the fact that she has what she sees as a commodity, her virginity, that she can use as she chooses, she's going to say it's her right. The second story, here's where they intersect. Nadia Suleiman, already a single mom who through in vitro fertilization has had sextuplets, six babies. She has now given birth to octuplets, a record eight babies. And as a matter of fact, the medical team was only expecting seven. They were surprised by the eighth. She went to fertility doctors because it was her choice. As her mother says, she is into children. And mother said she wishes she had learned to teach kindergarten rather than to have babies. But nonetheless, she has no money. She has no job. She had nonetheless access to this medical technology. And now she is the mother of 14 babies. No job. No husband, more importantly. And her family recently filed for bankruptcy. But she says it's her choice. And you see, this is where feminists and those who've been pressing the very liberal line in bioethics have themselves in an absolute knot, because they've been arguing that you can't deny when people demand the access to this kind of fertility treatment. As a matter of fact, Ellen Goodman, predictably a columnist on the left, she says fertility doctors don't say no, nor should they, to single or gay patients or those who already have children. So here again, choice, choice, choice. That's the only moral principle some people recognize, an increasingly large number of Americans. And what we're seeing here in these two stories is that choice really is a very limited moral principle. This is where the Christian worldview immediately collides with this reduction of moral principle to choice, because the Bible actually doesn't present choice as a very important issue, other than when God says, choose ye this day whom you shall serve. When God says, look, I've set before you life and death, blessing and curse, choose life and live. In other words, the only choice that God honors is the choice to obey. That's a very different understanding of choice than what we're getting in this secular system of ethics. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Tupelo, Mississippi. Clay's listening on XM170. Go ahead, Clay.
Hey, Dr. Mull. I got just a quick question for you. I was in a room with some local pastors who were buzzing about this lady that had 14 children, and the buzz was, how could she do this to these 14 poor, innocent children, bringing them to the world? Now we've got to pay for it. They don't have a fighting chance, the whole bit. And my question is, how does a pastor like myself address pastors, address laymen, address an entire congregation with a right to life, a pro-life ethic for this lady's choice? Both instances you're talking about, to me, it just reminds me of free choice with zero accountability. Neither parties here seem like they care much about accountability. But and again, in my line of work, my line of thinking, just with my defense to these pastors, last week with the Super Bowl, there was a young man that made a humongous play, 100-yard touchdown interception that everybody was talking about. He's the youngest of 14 children. So my question is, which of the 14 do you get rid of? Which ones do you do we selectively get rid of? Or again, how would you put a pro-life spin on this situation?
Yeah, it's a great question, Clay. And I would say the pro-life angle on this is, first of all, we've got to question the technology when it comes to the birth of these children. And about 10 years ago now, I participated in a moral symposium in which I was the conservative evangelical ethicist and theologian. And the question was, test tube babies, yes or no? And I had to answer the question, no. And there are a lot of evangelicals who are scandalized by that. But one of the arguments I made, and this is not, I believe, the most important argument, but one of the arguments I made is that this technology simply allows, without any kind of barrier whatsoever, reproduction without marriage. I mean, that's exactly what's going on here. You order your gametes from the gamete bank, and you go to the fertility clinic, and then you have the embryos fertilized. That is, the egg and the sperm come together. You have the embryo. Once fertilization takes place, and once they're at the right stage, you simply transfer them into the womb. I mean, the fact is, here you have a woman who has had 14 children. She has no husband. And I see that as a huge moral problem. I think once you begin there, the number of children is far less significant as a moral issue. The very fact that she is considered, given the moral insanity of our times, to have a right to access to this kind of fertility treatment, even though she's not married, not to mention ready to take care of these children, I just think this is a horrible, horrible illustration of where things go horribly wrong. Now, Clay, you're onto something there where you talk about, for instance, selective reductions, because and that's another great moral complication with this technology. You're dealing with frozen human embryos by the hundreds of thousands stored in embryo banks. You're dealing with some of these embryos being destroyed simply because there's no intention ever to transfer them to a mother's womb. You're talking about some multiple pregnancies where the standard medical advice is to use selective reduction, which means strategic abortion, in order to kill some of the embryos or some of the fetuses to give others a supposedly better chance for life. You see, let's just look at it this way, Clay. Here's the clearest way I know to look at it. If this woman did not have access to this technology because she simply says she has a right to exercise her choice to use it, if she did not have access to this technology, we would not be having this question. But in this time of such tremendous moral confusion, there are going to be a lot of people who are absolutely scandalized when I say she should not have access to this technology. I have real questions whether anyone should have access to this technology, but at the bare minimum, in any sane moral system, only married couples would have access to this technology, and only under the most restrictive circumstances that would prevent any freezing long-term of human embryos that would guarantee the implantation and or at least the transfer of every human embryo, and of course would not allow for any selective reduction, also known as strategic abortion, of any unborn human life. This is one of those questions where you have to go back to the source and say something's wrong at the start. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about choice as a moral principle. This is a principle that simply can't carry the freight. Two examples recently in the news make this case. The young woman who is selling her virginity, she says she has the choice to do it. She says it's her choice to monetize her virginity. She says she's doing so as the fulfillment of what it means to be an empowered young female who is in a women's studies program studying, of all things, the value of virginity at Sacramento State University. And then you have the second case, this woman, Nadia Suleiman, who has given birth to octuplets after sextuplets, unmarried, for that matter, unemployed, who simply says it's her choice. She should have the access to this fertility treatment. She has it on demand. She makes use of it. And she's now got 14 kids, no husband, no job. Big headlines, though. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Golden, Colorado. Dave's on the line. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, you know, unfortunately, this comes right back down to personal accountability. And this woman obviously was not raised with a moral compass as to make sound, solid judgments when it comes to having children. And the ironic thing here is with 14 children, how in the heck is she going to give individualized attention to them as a mother should be able to do, with no husband, without a job, without a means of support? So obviously it becomes a burden of the taxpayer for this woman's choice. And this is going to be a very expensive choice in a lot of different dimensions.
It's already a... Yeah. Go ahead, Dave. I'm sorry.
Emotionally, physically, and financially. And it falls back on her shoulders and eventually to her parents' shoulders on how she was raised. Because obviously they did not instill in her... sound, good judgment that was God-given. It's called a conscience. And whatever happened to that, it's gone. And personal accountability is not a popular choice among the feminists. It never will be, because they've got to have their choices. Well, go ahead and have your choices, but they're going to pay for it in the end, and they're going to see the error of their ways. It's that simple.
Dave, thanks for your call. You know, the feminists really are the perfectors of this moral argument, because choice is so central to every argument they seem to make. Their position on abortion, they say, is pro-choice. You know, their adamant first principle is a woman's right to choose. At the same time, I want to recognize that this goes beyond feminism. I think this is one of the situations in which we have to recognize that this kind of muddled moral thinking has infected the entire culture. And it's very interesting you mentioned that, you know, what happened to her conscience. You know, that's one of the things we have to remember. Paul, in Romans chapter 2, is very clear that the matter of conscience is a testimony to the fact that we're made in the image of God, but we can, by our own pattern of sinful thinking, corrupt our own conscience. You know, this is what we call rationalizing. We can rationalize so our conscience no longer even hears and it no longer speaks to us with the kind of clear moral word that that it should, if rightly aligned. Now, so what we're looking at here, by the way, another interesting argument, libertarians out there. This is where a lot of conservatives don't recognize the difference between a conservative argument and a libertarian argument. A conservative argument centers in what is necessary to conserve what must be maintained. So it's to conserve traditional understandings of the importance of family, of the importance of marriage, of the importance of civic order, of the importance of personal responsibility, of personal liberty within the constraints of a legal and just order. Those are conservative principles. Libertarian principles are very different. Libertarian principles are based upon the fact that the most important thing we have is liberty, and our moral responsibility is to exercise that liberty, with the fewest constraints possible. And so the libertarian argument, look at this and say, look, I don't want the government to tell her whether she can or cannot have children by means of these extraordinary and advanced fertility treatments. And this is where libertarianism just ends up with an economic argument, saying it's irresponsible for her to have them under these circumstances. I just want to draw your attention to the limitations of that argument, because the insinuation there is, the implication is, that if she were a multimillionaireess who had these 14 children, that'd be fine, because she could supposedly afford them. Well, my argument is that from a biblical perspective, she is unmarried, and thus it is not God's intention that she have children. And much less, by the extraordinary means of purchasing the male cells and using the extraordinary advanced technologies that were required for her to get pregnant and to bear these children. I think the most important thing I can say is she should not have had this choice, regardless of whether she could have afforded it or not. I very much do appreciate the point that, after all, it's an exercise of very poor personal responsibility. I think it's more than that as well. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're glad for you to sign up to follow us on Twitter. Go to twitter.com, go to Mohler Radio, and join the discussion thread there. Glad to hear from a couple of our callers who've written in. One points out that the limitations of choice are real obvious. You can't say, I choose to murder, I choose to rape, I choose to steal. So why does it work with abortion or the two cases we're talking about here? Says choice is irrelevant. Rather than the word irrelevant, I understand what the writer means there. I would say it's just insufficient. It can't carry the freight here. We had another one write in to say, I think that choice is a moral principle, can only be as valid as the moral standard that informs that choice. Well, that's right, and that's a biblical principle. The Lord did not say to Israel, choose whatever you like, because the moral principle is choice. He said, choose ye this day. He said, I set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Choose life and live. He says, if you choose life and you obey, then you shall prosper. If you deny that and you disobey, then you shall surely die, and you shall be destroyed, and Israel shall be defeated by its enemies, and you shall be scattered among the nations. So is choice a moral principle? Yes, choice is a moral principle in terms of responsibility. Is choice a moral principle that can carry the freight of determining what is right and what is wrong? Absolutely not. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I think it's very interesting that so far every listener has that is called, every caller has been thinking mostly about the octuplets, not about the woman selling her virginity. I think that's another very interesting one. All right, let's go to Lucy calling from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Go ahead, Lucy.
Yes, hi. Well, when you said that about the girl, I guess I didn't really know about that story. But talking again about the woman, I was kind of wondering about the doctors. Do you think that they were kind of using this woman as a project or kind of as a guinea pig in the name of advancing medical science?
You know, Lucy, I think you're onto something there, in at least the fact that this doctor, who was her fertility specialist, was breaking some moral and medical protocols here, and he must have been trying to make some kind of point. Whether it was for the advancement of medical science, I don't know. I really don't. But I do think you're onto something with the suggestion that whatever fertility specialist allowed and made this to happen. After all, she couldn't do this herself. It was very publicly known to have been done with the assistance and supervision of a fertility expert. He or she certainly had his or her own point to make, and a good point to have added. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, on the issue of the woman selling her virginity, that is the kind of story, just when I see the headline, that we would normally never take up on this program. Because we're not looking for the sensational, ridiculous, tabloid kind of story. And when, in fact, it was put in front of me by research staff earlier this week, I dismissed it as being beneath the dignity of this program and unworthy. That was before, however, I found out a bit more about what's going on, because this is not just some kind of publicity prank of a young girl. This is indeed being done in the name of feminism. It's being done by someone who is a woman studies major at one of the major state universities in California. This is something that's getting a great deal of attention because she is articulate, and the case she has made for what she is doing is indeed the quintessence of many, you know, just this is Helen Reddy. I am woman. Hear me roar. That's what's going on here. She says she has the right to do this. When I read her say, and again, you just think about this line when she says, "For me, valuing virginity as sacred is simply not a concept I could embrace, but valuing virginity monetarily, now that's a concept I could definitely get behind." Okay, so here's the bottom line on that. Prostitution is something that that feminists fought because it was the objectification and the commodification of women. But when feminists say that the only moral principle that to which a woman can be held is choice, and a woman chooses this, well, they're in an absolute conundrum. They're in an absolute situation of moral meltdown. Their logic has reached its end. They don't want to say that prostitution's okay. But if a woman chooses it, well, then what are they going to say if choice is the greatest moral principle they know? They don't want female infants aborted in the name of male infants, fetuses surviving. But if they have been arguing all along that a woman has the right to an abortion for any reason or no reason, they then have a complete meltdown of their principle. And feminists here have put themselves in this position, but as I want to make clear, this moral nonsense isn't limited to feminists. It is spreading throughout the culture in virtually every other arena where serious moral argument now just comes down to choice. Let's go to Les calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Let's hear next from 170. Go ahead, Les.
Hi, I'm doing fine. I just wanted to comment on one of the comments an earlier caller made regarding the accountability, and I do believe that, but they also said the way the person was raised. And I don't agree that necessarily in today's society and culture that just because a person may have been raised with a Christian or moral background that they make the right choices as an adult. So I don't think that you can put that responsibility or rather blame on the actual family. It is a personal choice and a personal accountability. Although I understand the moral compass could be off, but I don't think that you should put that on to the family of that person who made that wrong choice.
Yeah, Les, I think that under any ordinary circumstance, your point is just completely valid. And this is a normal circumstance, qualified only by the fact that this woman's mother seems to have helped to empower her to do this. And I don't have enough information to be able to speak too authoritatively on that, but I know that the mother has appeared in the media, and she has said things like she wishes that her daughter had instead decided to become a kindergarten teacher. She says that her daughter is obsessed with children. So I don't know, but your point is well taken. The woman here whose choice is morally interrogated and must be morally interrogated is this woman, Nadia Suleiman, who made the choice to avail herself of these fertility clinics. Again, it just shows you the limitations of choice. Why should a woman in her situation have such a choice to begin with? It simply means that it's produced by the fact that when you have something like fertility treatments and these advanced reproductive technologies, they have to be available to everyone at any time for virtually any reason, or you are discriminating. And in today's culture, you know, to be charged with discriminating is supposedly the worst thing possible. Of course, every single sane moral person's making discriminations of a moral nature all day long. You don't hire an embezzler to be your accountant. That's discernment. That's also discrimination. It's also moral sanity. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. These are interesting, interesting stories. And quite frankly, they're sensationalistic, and they're not normally the kinds of things that I would raise in the stewardship of the time of this program. But both have now emerged into the mainstream media for good reason. And that is that they raise unavoidable questions. When you start looking at these two stories, you realize that media outlets like the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, you name it, they're going to have to pay attention to these because they present realities that demand some clarification and some answer. Just about everyone is outraged and horrified by the idea of an unmarried, unemployed woman having 14 babies. And yet, we're living in a time of such moral confusion in this secular and relativistic age that most people, even though they have this gut-level feeling that this is just deeply wrong, and many people are even outraged, they're really hard put to come up with any explanation, with any moral argument, because they have been basically disarmed for that kind of conversation by the relativism and the confusion of our postmodern times. The same thing with the woman who is selling her virginity. You know, that's about as sensationalistic and just tabloid ready as you can imagine. But when you recognize that this is a woman who actually is connecting the dots, and she actually is making the case that she has the right to do this because she is a woman, and thus this is her commodity, it is her body, and it is her right. Well, the same woman who's been saying, it's my body and I'll do with it what I want to when it comes to abortion, are hard-pressed to say that this woman shouldn't do what she's doing now with her body, which is a form of rather eccentric prostitution. You know, the means to moral sanity and things like this is not hitting your head on the wall and saying, what do we do in this case? The way to moral sanity is saying, let's back up a little bit and try to figure out how we got here. And what we really need to see in terms of answering that question is that once we divorce moral issues from a very clear sense of accountability to right and wrong, and we simply forfeit right and wrong for the rights talk of your rights and my rights and our rights and their rights, unless we see that the problem is that we have abandoned any claim to be able to tell people that's right and that's wrong on issues of especially a sexual and reproductive nature, once you understand that we have forfeited that ground, you realize why, when you now see these stories emerge, most people just wring their hands and say, I know it's wrong, but I don't know why it's wrong. I know it's wrong, but I'm not sure I can make an argument that it's wrong. I know it's wrong, but, wow, I wish I had some way of explaining why it's wrong. Well, if you take these things on their own terms, you really can't explain why they're wrong. You got to go back behind the question and figure out the worldview implications and go from there. That's what we try to do every day on this program, Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening today. Remember to sign up for Twitter at Mueller Radio. Go to Facebook to the Albert Mueller Program and join me next week. I'll see you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.